This is As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the show where we bring you the stories behind the stories that matter in your life. We'll tell you something maybe you didn't know, hear from the experts, authors, and others, and hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. But in every case, we call it As We See It. On today's show, it's Stanley Cup final time. Yes, final, singular. Kings versus Rangers. And we got a preview from a national writer. Plus, how safe is your reputation online and what can you do to repair it? You'll hear from an expert. Let's meet the friends. Jennifer Bjorklund is in the newsroom today.
Hey, Phil. Here's some stuff you might not know about the U.S. Sergeant Freed after a prisoner exchange with the Taliban. We've heard a lot about him, but there's a few things you don't know.
Ooh, all right. And he packed for two shows. That's how prepared Jay Capadonia is.
Phil, the LAPD has a couple of new crime-fighting tools in their arsenal, but could they be doing more harm than good? I've got details.
And glistening from his four-mile jog into the studio, here's Chris Martin.
There's a new study that reveals what could happen to you if you continue to eat white bread.
I need to hear that story. I'd love the white bread.
I think a lot of people do.
All right. Let's get started. Jennifer, stuff we don't know about Bo Bergdahl.
Bo Bergdahl. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because they're talking about how soon will he be able to get back to his regular life, the life before he was captured, the life before he was a soldier even. So I did a little digging into what that life was like.
And what'd you find out?
Yeah, well, apparently he was a homeschooled kid, got his GED through the College of Southern Idaho by the time he was in his early 20s. And as an adult, he studied and practiced fencing and martial arts before switching to ballet at the Sun Valley Ballet School in Ketchum, Idaho.
What now?
You wouldn't figure that. Yeah, he's a soldier that did ballet. He never owned a car, rode his bike everywhere. So kind of an interesting guy. A fellow soldier specialist Jason Fry says Bergdahl was quiet, not one of the troublemakers, focused, well-behaved, sat alone on his cot studying maps of Afghanistan. Bergdahl told Fry before their deployment to Afghanistan, and this is a quote, "If this deployment is lame, I'm just going to walk off into the mountains of Pakistan." Yeah, speculation. That's exactly what he did when he disappeared off base and was captured.
Wow. Well, okay.
It'll be interesting to hear from him if he, in fact, does still speak English after all those years of not speaking probably at all.
It's really interesting because all of those things you mentioned about, like, ballet and, you know, not having a car and that's all un-American. Like
Un-American?
Well, if you don't have a car in America, you're an outcast.
You're on the outs.
Right. But in Europe and all these other places, they don't have cars. They ride bicycles.
So what you're saying is when you're growing up in America and you're going to high school, how many kids do you know who fence?
Right.
Who ride a bike everywhere?
Right.
And how many guys do you know who are in ballet? And that combination of things, you're saying, okay, that raises a little red flag.
Yeah. Maybe he wasn't too into the Americana, if you will.
Perhaps. And where was he from? He's from Idaho.
Idaho, which is very American.
Middle America.
Very, you know, Chevrolet and apple pie.
Yes.
And potatoes.
Exactly.
And potatoes, yes.
All right. Now we have this strange and an even stranger story. And this has to do with hurricanes, Jennifer.
It does. Hurricanes and sexism. Would you ever put those two things together?
No.
Well, you know, some researchers did. And the question was, would more residents of New Orleans have evacuated ahead of Hurricane Katrina in 2005 if it had been named Kurt or Kevin or some other man name? Well, there's a study published today that suggests people would have evacuated. Remember, 1,800 people died in this storm. And because people unconsciously think a storm with a female name is less dangerous than one with a masculine name, those in its path are less likely to flee and therefore more vulnerable.
Okay, I may speak for all the guys in the room here, but a furious woman is pretty scary to me.
Yeah, you know, yes. But they did their analysis from 1950 to the 2012 hurricanes. And for the strong ones, the really strong ones, the more feminine the name, as ranked by volunteers on an 11-point scale of how feminine do you feel like this name is, the more people it killed. And one behavioral scientist calls it proof positive that gender stereotypes affect behavior even when the male or female isn't a living thing.
No kidding.
Wow.
Yes.
We have messed up subconsciouses.
I think it's interesting, though.
I'm not running from Hurricane Brittany, all right?
You're not?
No.
All right, Chris. All right, be prepared.
Yeah. Unless she's carrying a frying pan to throw at your head.
I used to love watching the Brady Bunch. Mm-hmm. And perhaps my favorite character was Alice.
She was everybody's favorite. And you probably heard that Anne B. Davis, Alice on the Brady Bunch, died over the weekend. Here's some stuff you might not have known about her. In real life, Davis said she wasn't quite as handy around the house. Basically, she said, "I don't do that well with children. Although my sister tells me I'm a great aunt." She told People magazine in 1992 also that she hated to cook. When it's her turn in the house, she told the magazine they just eat out.
Acting then, huh? That just proves how great of an actor she was.
And do you know, she won her 2 Emmys and she got her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1960, not for her role as Alice, but it was her big break in Hollywood. She won the role of Charmaine Schultze Schultz, a secretary in the 1950s sitcom The Bob Cummings Show.
Oh, good old Bob Cummings. Who?
Ring any bells? With,
who?
Really?
No. Nope.
I mean, I never heard of it. But that was the character that won her the 2 Emmys and 2 additional nominations for Best Supporting Actress.
Wasn't watching TV in the 1950s. I'm sorry.
I know. But it's not even a show that I've ever even heard of or that's, you know, I mean, she'll live on forever in syndication.
Like, how dare you not know who Bob Cummings is? How dare you?
Whippersnapper.
Yes. Well, all right.
Hey,
Jay.
It's no Andy Griffith show.
No, it's not. Right. And there's probably not even any whistling in it. All right. Mm-hmm. Jay, can you whistle a song for me about a drone?
I cannot, but I can tell you that the LAPD has acquired what's called Dragonflyer X6 unmanned aerial vehicles. They're basically drones.
Oh.
Okay. They got the loans from the Seattle PD, who have had them for years, and they haven't used them up there. The drones are not being used right now. They're being held by, quote, an undisclosed federal law enforcement agency. The LAPD and the police commission, they have to sign off. There's going to be some major review about how the LAPD can use these drones, how often they can use these drones. Now, the LAPD swears that they're only going to be using them during, like, SWAT situations, a barricade situation, a riot situation, or a hostage situation. But it's raising already. We acquired them. The LAPD acquired them on Thursday, and already people are ticked.
Yeah, is it going to fly over my backyard?
Yeah, it's like, hey, I'm outside washing my car or I'm doing my gardening or whatever it may be, and now I've got the LAPD breathing down my neck.
Or I'm growing some kind of wild exotic plant in the backyard. And normally, right. In order for you to see that, LAPD, you would have to go to a judge and get a piece of paper, get a warrant to come through the front door
or
the side gate.
Or you just fly a chopper over the house. I mean, they've been doing that for years. But the thing is, with the choppers, you hear it coming.
Exactly. And this is like the big public privacy concern, is that if I am doing something, and it's kind of the way the law is set up, it's kind of no harm, no foul. You have to be caught in order for an officer to have probable cause and get a search warrant and things like that. So there's going to be a couple of public hearings coming up, and get ready. Remember the name, Dragonflyer X6. Now, the cops won't call them drones, but that's exactly what they are. Know that. But the cops are calling them unmanned aerial vehicles.
Unmanned.
So they're trying to take the stigma of drone away from the drones that they're using. And they're going to have a bunch of public hearings coming up, so you'll be able to go down, voice your concern, and say, I want to wash my car privately.
Ah. Now, if it were the middle of February and I was talking about hockey every other day, you'd say, Phil, you're droning on about hockey.
Droning on.
But it's the Kings and the Rangers for the Stanley Cup Final.
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
Up next,
yes.
The lead NHL writer for the Bleacher Report gives you a preview right here on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends on KFWB News Talk 980.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. So glad you tuned in to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends. We're here every weekday afternoon at 2. Phil Hewlett, Jennifer Bjorklund, Jay Campidonia, Chris Martin. Right here on KFWB News Talk 980. Tell your friends and thank you very much. Wow. Wednesday, the Stanley Cup Final begins at Staples Center, pitting the Los Angeles Kings and the New York Rangers. And we want to get a preview right now. Joining us on the program is the lead NHL writer for the Bleacher Report, Dave Lozo. Dave, thank you. Where do we find you right now?
You find me at gate A38 and Terminal A at Newark Airport, ready to fly out to Los Angeles.
Oh, a Jersey boy today.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I love a good 6-hour play with a stop in Phoenix. You can't beat that.
Oh, anytime you can stop in Phoenix, but that's a joy. Hey, the game last night, down to the wire. Not sure it was destiny necessarily for the Kings, but it sure felt like they had the momentum coming into the extra period. What do you think?
I think when Patrick Kane couldn't get that rebound past John Quick there in the final seconds of regulation, I thought that was the game. I thought that was a big save Quick made, a big save he needed to make. And once overtime started, it was a little bit back and forth, but you got the feeling that the Blackhawks were a little more skittish, particularly Nicholas Chalmerson. I thought Nicholas Chalmerson was really skittish in the overtime, and then the play that led to the winner was kind of a broken play where the Kings just looked very calm. They looked very sure of themselves. And, yeah, it's a lucky bounce, but you make your own breaks. And I thought the Kings deserved to win that series, and they did, and now I can't wait for the final.
You know, I thought that the Kings, every time that they went to overtime, they played like they were a team of destiny because, correct me if I'm wrong, but typically – in a postseason playoff where there is overtime, the two teams tend to go into more of a defensive mode and wait for the other team to make a mistake and capitalize on that. In the Kings' case, they're just going for it.
Yeah.
You know what it is? I find that overtimes, I feel like they're either over in the first 8 minutes or they go double OT or three OTs. But you're right, though. The Kings did not sit back. And I think, you know, people talk about experience and clutch and all that stuff, and it's hard to quantify. It's hard to, you know, point out, but I think you see it in the way they play in tight games. I think you see it in the way they play in games where they're down 3-0, down 3-1, down 3-2 in the series. And I mean, in this game, they were down 2-0 to start. They were down 4-3 in the third, and nothing changes. They don't get out of their game. They don't make mistakes. They don't cheat. They just stick with the system. And I think that goes back to Daryl Sutter. I think Daryl Sutter is one of the best coaches in the NHL, and I think his players trust him. They trust the system, and all that translates into that ability to win tight, close games like they have in the postseason.
It seems to me that they thrive being down a game or two or down a point or two, and then they get together in the locker room, and they just put their heads together, and they go, look, let's just beat them to the puck. Let's beat them to the boards. And Phil and I were talking off the air before the show that in the overtime game last night, the Kings came out, and they just dominated everybody.
Right, and that goes back to the mindset they have that they've been building the last few years with all the winning they've been doing. And some teams, when they get down 3-1 in a series, down 2-0 in a game, they change. They start saying, boy, we got to get away from what we've been doing. We have to cheat a little bit here in the neutral zone, and that ends up costing you. That ends up costing you that third goal that puts you down 3-0, and you can't come back from that. With the Kings, they don't do that. They just say, you know what, we're bigger than you, we're stronger than you, we're deeper than you. Yeah, you got two goals, but that's not the end of the world.
Is that a strategy thing, you think? Like, okay, let's let them into our living room a little bit, yeah. and then we'll slam the door when we're ready.
Yeah, the Kings are basically Muhammad Ali. They just rope-a-dope everybody. Every game, and they
that's perfect. Yeah, yeah.
Talking with Dave Lozo with the Bleacher Report. He's their lead NHL writer. All right, Dave, let's talk about the matchup between L.A. and New York. The Kings, we've talked enough about their play, but can they suck the Rangers into their suffocating style of play? And by the same token, can the Rangers force the Kings to skate more of a speedy up-and-down game with them?
I don't know if it's a matter of forcing one into the other. I think that the Kings can play either way. I don't think the Kings are as quick as the Rangers, but they're not slow by any stretch of the imagination. I think that the real, it's going to come down to a lot of little things. I think it's going to be Lundqvist versus Quick. I know Quick hasn't been great the first three rounds. I think he's had a lot of struggles there, but I think playing against the Rangers, I think you're going to see an elevated game. It's not going to be the same level of competition. I mean, the Kings, or the Ducks, the Sharks, the Blackhawks, I think they're all bigger, more talented teams than the Rangers, so you're probably not going to see as many quality chances. And what I think it's going to come down to is going to be how do the Rangers handle the size of the Kings forwards. I mean, the smallest Kings forward, if you want to say it's Mike Richards, he's bigger than four Ranger forwards. You know, the Rangers aren't a big team, so I would be worried about being worn down if I'm the Rangers. And if I'm the Kings, I would look at Matt Green and I would look at Willie Mitchell and how those guys handle the speed of the Rangers, because they have speed on every line, and that could be an issue for them. So a lot of people think this is going to be a pretty easy series for the Kings. I think it's going to be a close series, and how each team handles the other's strengths is going to really decide how it goes.
Yeah, that's interesting, because a lot of people are writing off the Rangers. I don't know if it's just a West Coast, a lot of people writing off the Rangers.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people out here wrote off the entire Eastern Conference back in February. But you just made the case for the Rangers perhaps bucking that perception. Talk about the historical significance of this series, at least for the Rangers.
Well, I mean, they haven't been there in 20 years. In terms of historical significance, you have no idea what it's like to live in this area and have to hear about the 1994 Stanley Cup every year like it was the greatest Stanley Cup of all time. So in a way, although I have no rooting interest, I wouldn't mind not hearing about 1994 for the next 30 years and having them have a fresh cup. But
And the nervous worry that the Islanders might get a cup before the Rangers.
Right.
Well, maybe a solo cup. I don't know about a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, there you go.
That's great. So, all right. So you talked about some of the big players in terms of scoring. Who do you expect on either side?
For me, I think whoever has Jeff Carter as their center, I think that line is going to be a huge difference maker, because Darryl Sutter shuffled the lines a little bit last game, but when Carter, Pearson, and DeFoli are together, I mean, they might be the fastest threesome in the NHL, and I don't know how the Rangers are going to match up there. The matchups for the Rangers, for me, the problem is going to be down the middle, because the Carter line is going to be the quick line, and you can throw the Derek Stepan line out there with Chris Kreider on it and stay with them. But the problem becomes, okay, well, who do you have against Kopitar? Derek Brassard? I mean, I don't know about that one. Brad Richards? Brad Richards can't skate or stay with Kopitar physically, so I don't know how that's going to work. So I would say it depends on who Alain Vigneault decides is going to be the biggest threat. I think if he throws McDonough Girardi out there against Kopitar, I think Carter has a big series, and vice versa. If it goes the other way, I think Carter has a big series. And on the Rangers side, the line I look at is Brassard, Pouliot, and Zuccarello. Those guys are the third line by name and ice time, but by production, they've been the best line. So if they take advantage of the lower lines of the Kings and the lower defense pairs of the Kings, I think that's going to be the line to watch for the Rangers.
You going
to
call it, or do you do that?
I'm so conflicted, because before the season, I picked the Rangers to win the Cup against the Blackhawks, and I think they could beat the Blackhawks. I don't know if they could beat the Kings, but I'll be an idiot homer and stay with the Rangers. I'll say Rangers in six. I'll say Lundqvist makes the difference.
Wow.
Well, you good luck with that, sir.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I know.
Otherwise, there'll be a whole case of Dixie Cups waiting for you.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, great to talk with you. Dave Lozo, love reading your stuff in the Bleacher Report. He's the lead NHL writer for Bleacher Report.
Thanks, guys.
And here's the thing, guys. A ticket in the cheap seats for the first game. Published ticket price at Staples Center for Wednesday night's game. $350.
Yo!
Wow.
What's a typical game? $70? $60?
Oh, not in the cheap seats. Like $15, $18, something like that.
Wow.
Holy cow.
$350. Now, they say subject to change. Now, if nobody buys it, but you know what?
Everybody's going to buy them.
Yeah. If the place sells out at that price, I just think they're probably locking out a whole spectrum of Kings fans that maybe can't afford that. You know?
Well, you're here in Los Angeles. There's a lot of people who make a lot of money in this town. So.
Yeah, but it's the playoffs, too, and then you'll forego food or your car payment or something like
and
that.
And it's not so much the Rangers versus the Kings right now. It's New York versus L.A.
Yes.
Bah, bah, bah.
Right. What did you say, Chris? What did you say it was? It was.
It's the city that thinks that no other city can make pizza versus the city that thinks no other city can make tacos.
It's true. That's it.
Oh, that's not racist
exactly.
At all.
No.
Okay.
Hey, what? We ever make tacos brutal. On white bread, there, Chris?
I have.
Have you?
Yeah, I've stuffed all kinds of stuff in white bread and folded it in half.
No, but there's something about white bread that we need to know about today, and it has to do with our health. And what is it?
Well, if you're on a diet, you better cut white bread out of it. Because two or more daily servings could be why some people are packing on the pounds right now. There's a study out of Spain that looked at the eating habits of over 9,000 Spanish grad students for 5 years, and they came to find out that predominantly the ones who predominantly eat white bread are at 40% higher risk of becoming overweight and obese.
How many percent?
40%. Seems like a lot, right?
It does. I mean, it seems easy enough to cut the white bread out. What would you use instead?
Whole grain, nine grain, you know, and there's no studies against the other breads that say whether or not they're related to
but
obesity.
But peanut butter and jelly on a whole grain? No.
Yeah, it's a little more chunky.
Bad.
But no? It's defeating the purpose.
Right.
Like, if you're going to go peanut butter and jelly, go big or go home.
I go peanut butter and pickle. You ever had one of those? Oh, yeah, that's some good texture.
On white bread?
Apparently, the problem is similar to soft drinks because white bread sugars are quickly transformed into fat. That's what the study came to find. Though, know this. The study has not been published in a peer-reviewed medical
journal
yet. So it's
bogus?
No, it just means that you shouldn't. It's considered preliminary. But
it's something we kind of already all know. But here's the thing. We're talking about Italian white bread, which is really different from our white bread because in Europe, they think our white bread tastes like cake because it's got so much sugar in it.
It's like angel food cake.
It's even worse for us.
Peanut butter and jelly on cake. I don't think there's any problem with that.
No problem whatsoever. Jen, get on that.
We wonder why we're obese in this country.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of fatties walking around.
Yeah. What was that? Peanut butter and pickle? Try this. Grape jelly and mustard. Mm. I'm not kidding.
That's
on
disgusting.
White bread. No, it sounds like it, but it's delicious.
Huh.
All right, I'll do it.
Hey, how much of your personal information are companies scooping up when you're online? What about the reputation of your small business? What if you're searching mustard and grape jelly? We'll speak with an online reputation expert next on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends right here on KFWB News Talk 980. This is As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thank you for tuning in. And you know what? If you go to philhewlettandfriends.com, a couple of ways for you to get a hold of us. There's the contact page, but also you'll see a blue tab on the right side. You click on that. And if you have a microphone on your laptop or your computer, you can actually leave us a voicemail, and it's free. You don't have to leave an email or anything like that. You click on it, little area opens up. When you're ready to talk, you click, you talk, it records. If you like what you said, you click send, and we get it in our inbox.
And it's free.
And it's free. Again, nothing. No registration. Absolutely free. It betrays the internet definition of free, which means you have to hand over all kinds of data. But in this case, nothing.
It's free, but here's a 120-question survey.
Nobody can hack into it.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of hacking, everybody's putting out these new smart cars, right? So your dashboard's got basically an iPad on it or whatever. But your cars basically run off of computers these days. And I just bought one not too long ago. And it's probably got more computers than I know what to do with. But your car's not that smart. Experts now say your car's pretty dumb when it really boils down to it. And hackers can get into your car, into the computer that regulates the steering, regulates brake pressure, regulates your airbags. So if you're driving down the highway and somebody pulls up alongside you and starts hacking into your car, they can actually make you make a left-hand turn or a right-hand turn or make your airbag explode. And it's increasingly becoming a problem because the tech experts, the Brainiacs, say that the 50 to 100 tiny computers that control your car are basically speaking with 1990s language to each other. So these hackers, they're so advanced, they can do it off their cell phone and make your airbag deploy. It's incredible. It is incredible. So your car may not be that smart.
And this comes back to your original point about hackers, your original question about hackers, is why are they such jerks?
They are jerks. And this is the thing. I mean, there really is potential for danger here. Because, I mean, if you're running down the freeway and the 405 just happens to be open and you're going 70 miles an hour and somebody makes your car automatically stop or make a right-hand turn, you could really do some damage out there. And, you know, it's ridiculous. So car manufacturers have now hired a bunch of experts to see if they can update the software in your car.
And I wonder if you're driving around now, since you'll be hooked up to your 4G, your connection, you know, on your phone, you're actually streaming your data out there. And when you're at home or at work, you're using a your browser, you're using your search engine, whatever it is, and you're leaving a footprint out there that people, if should they want to, for legal purposes or otherwise, they can track your activity and put together a profile on you and then begin marketing to you, or perhaps there would be some other nefarious purpose for tracking your information. But joining us live, we want to understand this a little more. Managing Director at Fairpoint Alliance, he works with small business owners to focus their search marketing and online reputation management. Can also talk about you outside of the business arena a little bit as well. Hello, Alan Jordan.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. All right, let's start with the basic stuff. Explain to us what happens when we use, let's say, a search engine as far as our data is concerned.
Depending on your browser settings, which you can control, you know, somewhat, the search engines do audit where you're going and things like that. So they can do something what they call predictive search. So as you type in what you're searching for, you will see things come up to say, hey, this is what you're searching for based on patterns and things like that. Also, it allows them to focus more on dealing you other content as you go to other web pages too.
All right, so some of that can be good, some of that could be annoying. We can shut it off, though, you implied. So, or should we even care about that? Because, again, some of that info that comes up while we're browsing, at least in theory, is likely to be more helpful for us if, indeed, we're looking for it in the first place.
Yeah, you can set your security settings to be higher than not, which will, you know, alleviate some of that. But unless you're doing something that is, you know, somewhat illegal or something you shouldn't be doing, you shouldn't have to worry about it.
I wonder sometimes, because it does seem, at least in the Google sphere, if I'm looking at a blog, a Google-related blog or some other website that has some of Google's advertising embedded in it, and I'm looking at pages, and I understand how this works contextually. If I've searched for a couple of things maybe in the last half hour or so, that I might see advertisers related to that search. But I consistently see things that I have absolutely no interest in, and I wonder if some of the algorithms key in on a keyword somewhere, and then I'm stuck forever as the guy who's who's looking for a weekend hunting trip in the Catskills.
Actually, it does work somewhat like that. They have what they call broad fake phrasing, where they will take something, like you said, a weekend hunting trip in the Catskills may have come out of just searching for the Catskills. You know, if you went to go skiing, it just take that and make it an extension in order to sell their ads.
Or if I was searching for a weekend competition between cats, and which cats won the skills competition. And then that's what happened, cat skills.
They have these kinds of things?
No, they don't, but I searched for it once, and that's how I know they don't have it. So, you know what I want to ask you about is what you think of this European court ruling that forces Google to erase our past. And I don't know if you actually prefer that to happen. Could it happen here?
I think it will eventually happen here. It's just because there's so many things that's just out there that you don't want out there anymore or erroneously put out there, especially with bloggers. You know, there's no limitation in terms of, you know, what you can say and what you can do.
Could we get that wrong, though? Could Congress knee-jerk and say, okay, after a certain point, everybody's past goes away, and then that's a problem, because there's a benefit to a historical perspective on people who, a majority of us, I would suppose, would probably, for whatever reason, not want our history to disappear.
Yes, but, you know, what would that do to something like Wikipedia? You know, everyone goes there for their information, but, you know, anyone can put any posting there.
Right.
In the content. It's not, you know, it's not a reliable source of information. So when you look at it in that way, you know, it is what it is. You know, it can return to what we were used to in the history, you know, before we had the access of the Internet.
We had a healthy conversation about Yelp and similar companies prior to coming on the air here, because I think we've all had experiences with this. And there seems to be a great deal of access to reputation, if you will, for consumers to meddle with a company's message. And so if you have an angry consumer, for instance, it's so easy to just change the front page photo, for instance, of a company to something that would be potentially detrimental to their business. And I suppose from time to time this sort of thing ends up in court. But how concerned should businesses be in today's environment about their reputation?
They should definitely make sure they monitor what's going on with it. For instance, if you have like an hotel, you can have a reviewer place that you had bed bugs. That will kill your business.
Right.
And, you know, you start to wonder why all of a sudden your bookings start to drop because you're not aware of some type of activity like that. Statistically, one in three people who have a bad experience will post a negative review, while one in ten that has a positive experience will post a positive review.
Yeah, so people that are hopped up are more likely to take action.
I had an experience with Chipotle. The girlfriend went there, and evidently they were, like, out of ingredients. And the first thing she did, she got in the car, got on her cell phone, and just goes, I'm going to tell them what I think. And then they got a response.
Right, yeah, exactly. So what do you consult to a company when they do get something? You say they have to monitor it. Do you get right on it and start to try to turn that customer, unhappy customer, back into a happy customer?
Well, you may not can actually do that, but you shouldn't run away from what was actually placed there. For instance, let's say it was a negative review. Is it something in your business practices that you need to address? And if so, of course, address it. And then at the same time, let the world know that you did address it.
Yeah, but you don't want to let it fester because it could ultimately turn into a website with its own domain name. You know?
Yeah.
This hotel has bedbugs.com.
Right.
Exactly.
All right. Well, very good. Well, we learned a handful of things from you today. And again, we appreciate you spending some time with your expertise. That is Alan Jordan. He is the managing director at Fairpoint Alliance, all about search marketing and online reputation management. You got to manage your reputation online.
And he's right. And now the days with social media and college kids, and it's just like things that you post online. Phil, you've said it multiple times. Think before you post.
And the worst hashtag, by the way, this is a random fact for Monday. The worst hashtag you can use on Instagram is hashtag drunk. Photos with the hashtag drunk get 40% fewer likes than photos without it. No other hashtag has that detrimental of an effect. No other hashtag they've thought of. Let's put it that
they
way.
They are hilarious to look at, though, if you just scroll through a few of them.
But you're not going to like it because that'll get tracked back to you.
It goes back on your record. Exactly. But they are hilarious. People post dumb things all the time.
In fact, there are dumb things that you could do that didn't seem dumb at first, and we have an example of that because if you're not careful, you can detach your retina, and you'll hear about it next, right here on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends on KFWB News Talk 980.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Here we go, coming down the stretch on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends, right here on KFWB News Talk 980. And I think we've all gotten pretty accustomed to texting, but you can take it to the nth degree, Jay.
you really can. A 26-year-old man from China suffered a detached retina after hours of texting his girlfriend in the dark using a specific iPhone app. I will not get into that because I honestly don't know what
it
app
is.
It is.
And it may only be available in China.
Exactly. So apparently, a detached retina is kind of on the rise because of all the cell phone use across the globe. And more young people, because it's usually something that happens in elderly folks, but more young people are falling prey to this because all they want to do is stare at some screen and either play a game or text. Or
in the darkness of your bedroom.
In the darkness.
With all the colors blowing around in your eye and in your brain.
Exactly. The Chinese man had reportedly been texting his girlfriend nonstop throughout the day, which can get annoying, FYI. Oh. And then several hours at night while he was in bed. And when he woke up the next morning, he had an eye itch. So he went to go to the doctor.
Oh.
And the doctor says, yes, well, sir, you have a detached retina.
No.
And it's because of all of the vivid colors that are on your smartphone.
Clearly there's an app for that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But see, if you're stuck in the same place for a whole month, maybe texting is the only way to get a hold of the folks back at home.
Texting, social media, things like that.
That's
one way to contact people, especially if you're 60 feet under the ocean.
Like who?
Like Fabien Cousteau, who we all might know as the grandson of the famous explorer Jacques Cousteau.
Oh, I grew up on that guy.
He's inspired by his grandfather, and he's going to be going down to a school bus-sized laboratory with six bunk beds 60 feet under the ocean. With a five-person crew, they're going to be spending 31 days underwater. Somewhere out off the Florida Keys, which if you're going to go spend some time underwater, I'm sure the Florida Keys is a good place to do that.
I predict mutiny.
Mutiny
Cousteau,
underwater.
He thinks, you know, it's because of Jacques Cousteau. He thinks he's a big diving man.
He's
just like that.
Just like that.
I was just letting you hang out there.
Big diving man, you know.
They're going to be studying a coral reef, but I think this is a heavy case of nepotism, too. They've dubbed the mission Mission 31. Because Jacques Cousteau spent 30 days under the Red Sea.
1963. I remember that.
1963.
It was
and
a big deal.
Now Fabien wants to go deeper, further, and longer, and he's going to broadcast the entire expedition live online.
This is the son of Jacques Cousteau.
Grandson.
Okay.
Yeah, Philippe, who I believe passed away. Philippe Cousteau, his son. Accident, if I'm not mistaken. We'll double check that.
You're like a professional.
I could be wrong, I love the Jacques Cousteau stuff. So, all right, very good. And then now, if you're going to be in the water, you want to decide for yourself when you go into the water. Isn't that right, Jennifer?
Right, and you don't want to drive your car in the water, which is what happened to a guy on Sunday who was taking his new puppy for a walk around this pond in Massachusetts. Well, guess what? The puppy, a three-month-old German Shepherd puppy, drove the car into the pond.
Wait, what? How?
Yes.
Well, you know what? The cop showed up and he said, yep, the perp said she was just going with the flow of traffic. And the perp. What happened, this guy, John Costello, says he got in the car, started it up in preparation for the ride home. You know, some people, they get in the car, they start the car up. They're not even really in it, but they turn it on for the air conditioning and all that stuff. And he's packing his stuff. Puppy jumps in the car, kicks it into the first gear, and
accidentally, then, of course.
Yeah, like the dog jumps. I guess it's not a stick shift. It's just a regular car. So she hits the I guess you still call that the gear shift.
The gear shift, sure.
Yeah, she hits it into drive, which then throws her onto the floor onto the gas pedal. So she accelerates the car into the pond.
What?
Yep. Car
That's
was totaled.
Cute.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Is the puppy all right? Do we know?
The puppy's fine. The guy is fine. Everybody's fine. The car's totaled. But there's your sweet little puppy dog story of the day, Jay.
Everyone's day is now complete.
Yes.
We got some sort of fuzzball story out of Jay.
The pond puppy. I love that.
You know, any visual image you have of a dog driving, remember that commercial with a poodle driving in it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Hysterics. I would cry laughing every time I saw it.
Yeah. Well, see, if you want to live on the edge, you can have your dog drive the car, but I don't recommend that. But here are the 10 most popular answers to the question, how do you keep the life from being boring? How do you spice things up?
All right.
Well, here are 10 things.
Let's do this.
Number 10, going to a restaurant without a reservation. Whoa.
That's so scary.
On the edge. eating something after its expiration date.
Oh, boy.
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
These are both me every day.
Yeah. Have you ever been a bachelor?
Here's one. I think I'm going to peg this one on you ahead of time, Jen. Eating dessert for breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Ice cream today.
Yeah. Not paying bills on time. Okay. I cop to that.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not closing the blinds before you change clothes. Now we're getting a little edgy.
Yeah, baby.
Having a drink at lunch. Crossing the street when don't walk is flashing.
You are a rebel.
Driving through a red light, or at least a yellow light. Now, again, we don't endorse any of these things. These are what people said in the survey. Driving with your gas light on, you know, meaning you're out of gas,
that's
just
risky.
About.
See how far you can go. Okay, that's good.
And I've done this, just to be motivated. Booking a trip before you have the money to pay for it.
Oh.
That's a good one.
Motivation.
Because you won't get that deposit back.
No, you won't.
That's a good one.
But if you're, you know, if you're motivated by fear and you're in sales or some other performance-oriented job, you book something. Buy a car.
Oof. Say,
hey, I want this car delivered on this date.
Yeah.
Most people are motivated by the fear of having to eat expired food if they don't get enough money.
Right. No. Yeah. But anyway, you live on the edge. You be careful. You don't want to get killed.
Right.
Unless that's your business.
Some people actually, Phil, take living on the edge to the extreme. They get in trouble. They spend their life in jail, and then they end up on death row. They make some bad decisions along the way. Well, we have talked about it extensively on this program. There are some troubles trying to find the drug cocktail for the lethal injection process on death row. One guy that I never would have thought would be back in the headlines, but he's thrown right back into
them. Who's that?
Dr. Jack Kevorkian.
No kidding.
What?
His medical technician, who helped him carry out 60 assisted suicides, says he has the answer for the death row problem here in the United States.
And what's that?
Wow.
Bring back Kevorkian or Dr. Death's old standby, carbon monoxide.
Is that what he used?
That's a machine.
Yes.
Kevorkian machine?
This is an apparatus that he has designed or had designed where it's basically, it looks like a propane tank for like your barbecue, something to that effect, and a gas mask hooked up to the other end. You strap them up. He says it's quick. He says it's painless. They basically fall asleep, and you don't have to worry about people complaining that it's cruel and unusual.
I don't like it.
No.
But
you don't?
No. I don't know. I just have a problem with it. Why not? You know, don't die. Just go on a cruise around the world, right, Chris?
Imagine visiting 90 cities in 45 countries on 5 continents.
Is anybody doing that?
Yes. A bunch of wealthy retirees are booking grand tours where they travel around the world in 180 days. They're seeing a huge increase, 72% increase over the last 5 years.
On cruise ships?
Cruises range from $18,000 all the way to six figures, depending on how
wow.
big you want your cabin to be.
Hey, we love your comments. Send us email, feedback@philhewlettandfriends.com. Mike Starks, our producer. Nick Wright, thank you for your help. For Jennifer, for Jay, Chris, I'm Phil. Can't wait to talk to you next time when we call it As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.